The Measure of the Year by Beautiful Soup, read by Marianas. Four seasons fill the measure of the year. There are four seasons in the mind of man. He has his lusty spring, when fancy clear takes in all beauty with an easy span. He has his summer, when luxuriously springs honey-cud of youthful thought he loves to ruminate, and by such dreaming high is nearest unto heaven. Quiet coves his soul has in its autumn, when his wings he furleth close, contented so to look on mists in idleness, to let fair things pass by unheeded as a threshold brook. He has his winter, too, of pale misfeature, or else he would forego his mortal nature. John Keats. Chapter 1. Prologue. February, 1817. Hertfew, when Childermas approached with Vinculus, was obscured by what he knew on sight to be Strange's famed Pillar of Night. He had read of it in the papers, in the letters from Norrell's supporters, had made out something of the form of it in his own cards. La Maison Dieu and La Lune had appeared over and over when he had asked about Strange in Venice, until he had dreamt of them stacking endlessly and looming over him. Seeing it before him, gargantuan and swirling, he knew, as if on instinct, that he should not enter. If he so much as dipped his toe into the shadow of the tower, he would be trapped forever. It was not a fate, he fancied for himself. He instead regarded it from afar, watching the otherworldly constellations cutting through the gray winter sky.
"If I am your shadow and you are mine, then what is casting this one?"
Vinculus sounded as odd as Childermas had ever heard him, but his usual mocking tone still managed to undercut it. "Dark tower upon a dark hillside," he sang before Childermas could give an answer. "The prophecy I bore is still passing, reader."
"I wouldn't sound so cheerful about it if I were you. That was your chance for a feather bed this evening,"
Childermas pointed out to him, but unease swirled within him. He remembered the dizzying halls of Staircross, thick with the fairy's enchantment, felt the same magic emanating from the tower a hundredfold.
"We cannot enter." "My best chance," thought Childermas, "is vanished into this false night." The books were out of reach, Norrell was out of reach, his home was out of reach. It did not matter to him that he had been turned away from that home mere hours ago, as he stared into the black column rising from the Yorkshire earth, unable to make out even the bridge over the river or the gable end of a stable. There was a curious feeling of absence in his chest, something plucked neatly out when he had been focusing on other things. He turned Brewer around and trotted on to Highfield Farm. There he found Lucas, Davy, and another handful of servants. They greeted him warmly, and eyed Vinculus with the kind of suspicion one can only muster if he has had to manhandle the person in sight and knows him to be a trespasser and a thief. "He has made himself useful," was the only answer Childermas gave when questioned, and all the explanation they needed from him. Lucas explained, in such a rush it was hard to keep up, what had happened in the house. The appearance of Strange and the darkness, how they had decided to leave with the animals and their own belongings, of Lascelles' objections, of the man's disappearance down the ferry road. Lucas could not hide his anger at the gentleman, but Childermas did not chide him.
"We warned him," Lucas finished, "but he would not listen. He branded us all cowards and strode down it as if it was Hanover Street."
Childermas gave a snort and a short, humorless laugh. He did not give voice to his opinion that the gentleman no doubt deserved whatever fate awaited him. He rubbed at his cheek, which itched. "You did right, coming away, whatever Mr. Lascelles might have said."
"What will become of us, sir?" Davy asked, stepping up beside Lucas, his hands clasped nervously before him.
It was a strangely childlike gesture to see on such a large, powerful man.
"Are we still in Mr. Norrell's service?"
"I do not know. When I have figured this thing out, I shall speak to the solicitors. I dare say there is little standing for this in law, and there will be a great deal of debating. We will find some sort of employment for you in the meanwhile. Stay here tonight if Hodgson will suffer you. I will send word by tomorrow, I promise you."
With an idea forming, he pulled Vinculus to sit behind him once more on Brewer's back and cantered off in the direction of Staircross. Arriving at the hall was like stepping into the aftermath of a storm.
The landscape seemed transformed, although in truth he had never been well enough acquainted with the surrounds to be able to pinpoint the change. The inhabitants seemed nervous, and even from a distance he could see the way they danced around the yard in uncertainty. He slowed Brewer, let him cool down the last distance as soon as he could see there was no disaster at the house. White froth was building at the edge of the saddle, and Childermas could feel the horse's sides heaving for breath. He threw himself from the beast's back as soon as he arrived at the stables. Segundus was there waiting for him, his face scrunched in confusion at the sight of Vinculus. "Mr. Childermas! Who? What? Why?" He could see the questions swarming in Segundus's head, but he could not seem to give voice to any of them. "I will explain later." He pushed past Segundus to the main hall. "Where is the lady?" "Sir, your face!" Segundus cried when Childermas turned. The urgency in Segundus's voice was enough to halt him, make him tilt his head to regard him. "I know it is not a handsome one, Mr. Segundus, but I do not think it is so noteworthy as all that." Segundus was looking at him intently, but not precisely at him. His gaze seemed to travel the edges of him, and for a moment his hand came up as if to brush something from Childermas's shoulder. He caught himself just before he made contact, and instead brought his hand to his chest, gently curled. The intensity of this study made Childermas shift his feet, unused as he was to being on the receiving end of such a look. The movement seemed to bring Segundus out of his trance. "It is the queerest thing." His voice had lost its edge, had gone gentle, wondering. Childermas leveled him an unimpressed stare. Color rose to Segundus's cheeks, and he stepped forward as he hastened to explain. "Not half a day ago, that cut was fresh and bleeding. Now it looks as if it has been healed for years." Childermas looked at him for a moment, frowning. He brought his hand up to his cheek, stroked the faint silvery scar. He caught a flash of memory, or something like it. There was no way of telling if it was a dream. A pale hand, fingers grazing his cheek. The shape of a man, a lapwing in flight. "That cannot..." he started, his voice catching in his throat, making it even rougher than usual. "I do not..." He cut himself off once more and looked down at the blood-stained collar of his shirt, the splash of red on his neckcloth. "A hawthorn tree bent and twisted by the wind over the moors, the shiver of blue-stained limbs on snow, a hand over his heart." "There is magic all around you," Segundus said, his voice no more than a breath. "But it is like an echo, as if you were not the one to shout, but the cave which heard it." Segundus took in a sharp breath and looked up to Childermas's face with a curious frown. "What happened, Mr. Childermas?"
"I do not know."
His breath left him in a gust as his eyes met Segundus's. He searched himself for something more than fleeting images and impressions. He felt as though there were a part of himself that had been locked away, a chest or a box just big enough to contain an event, but which leaked the feelings out. They could build boxes for snuff and for fingers, he supposed, but not for memories. He remembered Lascelles cutting him, remembered the white pain of it and the chill of cooling blood on his cheek, and knew it had happened only hours since. He felt it now, and it was healed. Just a thin line where there should be a raw, ragged gorge in his skin. He could not reconcile the two. When he tried, he felt dizzy. "Oh my!" He heard Segundus's exclamation from a distance, and only came back to himself as the gentleman was lowering him into a chair. Childermas pushed insistently to his feet. "I do not have time for this. I need to speak to the lady."
"Mr. Childermas, you are not..."
"I am fully aware of what I am and am not, Mr. Segundus. Now take me to Lady Pole." The lady agreed to speak to Childermas, so Segundus settled them in her sitting room with some tea and cake. He seemed glad of it, as he had always struck Childermas as the sort of man who went rather to pieces when he didn't have a task to complete. There seemed to be a short, urgent discussion with Charles about the rest of the servants, but Childermas heard little of it as he steered Vinculus away from Lady Pole and towards the chaise by the window. "What do you know of the Tower of Darkness?" Childermas asked as soon as he entered the room. Lady Pole bristled a little to be addressed so, but answered sharply.
"Very little. I know my captor was particularly proud of his punishment."
"Is it the fairies' doing?"
"Who else's would it be?" Lady Pole asked dryly.
Childermas let out an impassioned curse that brought more color to Segundus's cheeks than to Lady Pole's.
"What does this mean?" Segundus asked gently, looking between them.
"If it was Strange's magic, then we might have had some chance at countering it and saving them,"
Childermas explained, pushing his hands through his ragged hair. He winced as his thumb caught in a knot. There's no one alive in England who knows how to end a fairy's enchantment. Your ladyship was... He cut himself off, thought the better of his words in the present company. He doubted any of the people in the room would consider Lady Pole lucky. The token was a way to end your ladyship's enchantment, but we have nothing like that in the case of the tower. He sighed and settled back into the chair. He took a deep draught of tea, near emptying his cup in one swallow. Perhaps the death of the enchanter would do it, but... Oh, Segunda said, sitting up. But he is dead. Childermas stopped with the cup halfway to his lips and stared at Segundus with all the weight he could muster. "You might have mentioned that earlier," Childermas said gruffly, and Segundus prickled, his shoulders shifting visibly under his jacket. "We didn't know of the darkness," Lady Pole said coolly. "And quite frankly, I am not in a mood to care much what happens to either of them, not when Mrs. Strange might still be trapped, and with Stephen." She swallowed and turned her head, but it was too late to hide the gleam of tears in her eye. In order to allow her time to collect herself, Segundus went over what had happened since Childermas had ridden out that morning. They had had a busy morning of it seemed, and Segundus himself seemed not to quite believe the half of it. Childermas listened attentively and did not interrupt, while Lady Pole nodded her agreement and interjected with her own details. When he was done, Childermas told of what had happened to him, how he had come across Vinculus and heard the tale of the book, how he had ridden back to Hurtview to consult with Norrell and Strange, but found the house unapproachable. "Do you know what has happened to Mrs. Strange?" asked Lady Pole, when the tales of both Staircross and Hurtview had been related. Childermas shook his head. "I was supposed to receive a message along with your finger, whether a letter or something else, I do not know. That may have held an answer."
"There is the spell of location in Ormskirk," Segundus said tentatively, and continued more rapidly when they both turned to look at him. "I have never had much success with it, but Mr. Strange sent me some clarifications a few years ago. Perhaps with this new rush of magic." Seeing that neither of them was about to oppose him, Segundus leapt to his feet and rushed from the room, not even excusing himself in his excitement. He appeared again moments later, clutching a letter in a silver basin, breathing rather heavily, and calling to his servant for some water from the brook. As Segundus filled the bowl with water, Childermas watched intently.
"I have never attempted it myself, sir," he said, "but I've seen Norrell do it many times."
"If it works, we should be able to
narrow down and find the lady's whereabouts, yes."
They were both standing over the bowl, looking in eagerly like two schoolboys.
Lady Pole remained on her seat.
Although her eyes were hopeful and curious, Childermas could feel her reluctance to approach the magic too closely. Glittering lines cut the bowl into sections, and Segundus could not contain his cry of delight.
"This is the closest I've ever got," he apologized to Childermas with a bright smile, only briefly, before turning back to the spell.
"Heaven, Hell, Earth, Fairy," he muttered, labeling each of the quarters. Childermas breathed in sharply as a small spot glowed in one quarter. "She's free, she's no longer in Fairy." Segundus quartered the bowl again. "Scotland, England, Ireland, elsewhere."
The spot glowed in elsewhere.
"Where could she be?" Lady Pole cried. She was standing now, too, peering into the bowl intently.
Segundus quartered the surface once more.
"Europe, Asia, America, elsewhere."
The spot was firmly in Europe. He quartered again, faster each time.
"France, Germany, Italy, elsewhere."
"Italy!" Lady Pole cried. Segundus quartered again.
"There was a story," Childermas said slowly, "that Strange moved his tower only once, when he went from Venice to Padua."
Segundus nodded, and, pressing his lips together, named the quarters Venice, Padua, Rome, elsewhere. The spot appeared in Padua.
"Can we see her?" Lady Pole asked enthusiastically. "Can I see her?"
Segundus hesitated. Strange had told him the form of the thing, he explained it, but, like most magic, he had never quite managed it. His gaze flickered to Childermas, his lips pressed together. "If there is a day for attempting new magic, sir," Childermas said, hoping that the confidence swelling within his breast would come through in his voice and bolster this newly hewn magician. "It is surely today. Look what you have achieved already."
Segundus met his gaze and regarded him steadily for some moments, until a smile jerked across his mouth. He reached toward the bowl and cast the spell. In a few short moments, they were gazing at Arabella Strange, surrounded by strangers who were looking at her and were either crying, laughing, or baffled.
Mrs. Strange seemed to fit into that last category, along with a very sensible-looking middle-aged gentleman.
"Oh, my dear friend," Lady Pole cried, tears in her eyes as she laughed joyously.